Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is back today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have all crazy martinis to welcome Jim back to the table here as we serve up three truly crazy martinis on three different stories. And so, Jim, let's dive right in. The horrific story, of course, over the weekend. David and I talked about it in three different ways yesterday, and that was the atrocity that happened in Sutherland Springs, Texas, the killing of 26 people, the wounding of at least 20 others. We talked about a lot of different aspects, but one of the things we were still scratching our heads over is how this guy who got a bad conduct discharge from the Air Force, which should have precluded him from being able to purchase firearms, especially given the fact that he abused his wife and his child, and we later found out yesterday that he cracked the child's skull. How in the heck did he get these guns? And, well, it turns out the Air Force dropped the ball. New York Times, a day after a gunman massacred parishioners in a small Texas church, the Air Force admitted on Monday that it had failed to enter the man's domestic violence court-martial into a federal database that could have blocked him from buying the rifle he used to kill 26 people. Under federal law, the conviction of the gunman for domestic assault on his wife and toddler stepson should have stopped him from legally purchasing the military-style rifle and three other guns he acquired in the last 4 years. Quote, the Air Force has launched a review of how the service handled the criminal records of former Airman Devin P. Kelly following his 2012 domestic violence conviction. Thanks. The statement said Heather Wilson, the Air Force Secretary, and General David Goldfein, the Air Force Chief of Staff, had ordered the Air Force Inspector General to conduct a complete review of the Kelly case. The Air Force also said it was looking into whether other convictions had been improperly left unreported to the federal database for firearms background checks. Jim, one of the things that doesn't get brought up enough in our discussions of gun issues and gun laws is how frustrating it's been to not have gun laws enforced a lot of times. The Obama administration took some heat on that. And then, of course, the other aspect of this is people need to comply with the law. And so the fact that the Air Force completely dropped the ball here is heartbreaking and maddening.
It is. And there are a couple of different ramifications of news like this. The first is it exposes how meaningless it is after a terrible tragedy or a mass shooting like this to say universal background checks or something like that, almost as meaningless as end the gun show loophole, even when the shooter did not purchase guns at a gun show. In this case, universal background checks. How about we get the existing background checks to work? And it's kind of jaw-dropping that this is now the second straight terrible massacre at a church where the gunman has obtained a gun that they were not supposed to be able to get under existing law because of a bureaucratic snafu in the federal government. In the Dylan Roof, the shooter down in the Charleston church shooting, he had a criminal record and should not have been allowed to purchase the firearm that he used because the information was not properly encoded between different counties and the interaction with the FBI. It was not put into the federal database. And as a result of that, he was able to purchase a gun and go on and commit his atrocious crime. You mentioned the Obama administration. One of the other ways you worry about, how does somebody who's not supposed to have a gun get a gun? One of the things that, you know, federal prosecutors are supposed to be cracking down on is straw purchasers. You've committed a crime, you are now on the gun list where you cannot purchase one, yet somehow violent criminals keep getting guns. Well, one of the things that happens is they get someone to buy the gun for them, someone who does not have a criminal record. That person passes the background check and the money gets, you know, usually the person is paid. This happens a lot in high crime jurisdictions, the Chicagos of the country, places like that. And Kevin Williamson has a pretty fascinating article about this where he goes and he looks in a lot of these cases, we're dealing with the girlfriends, children, siblings, people who are connected to violent felons who get someone in their family or if they were in a relationship to purchase the gun for them. And it's fair to wonder whether these people are doing so under duress or whether they realize the ramifications of what they're doing. And certain prosecutors have just kind of decided they're not going to prosecute straw purchases anymore. Now, you can kind of sympathize with this. Maybe these are people who are in very bad circumstances, very desperate circumstances. They might be afraid to turn down the demand that they make a straw purchase for someone who's a violent felon. you can't say, oh, we need to crack down on these gun crimes, and then when you're given evidence of gun crimes, refuse to prosecute. You kind of have to have this, make this kind of choice. This is where we are with our gun laws, in which it doesn't do any good to pass more laws unless you enforce the ones that are on the books, and unless you have all the different parts of our federal bureaucracy working together at least as well as we can reasonably expect. Now, the only other aspect to point out to this, I think my colleague Charlie Cook raises a really terrific point. This guy violently assaulted his girlfriend and a toddler, fracturing the toddler's skull. They got a year in jail. That's it? Really? It's really fair to ask whether this guy should have been walking the streets, period. Never mind whether he should have been barred from purchasing a firearm.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Yeah, that seems like a slap on the wrist as opposed to a serious sentence from a military court. It seems to be happening a lot these days. All right, let's move on to a less deadly story, but still one that is alarming on a number of levels. This is our second crazy martini, and this is the story of Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. If not for the church shooting, perhaps this would have gotten more attention the past couple of days, but the media has this bizarre disinterest in stories where Republicans get targeted. And we'll talk about that a little bit as this conversation continues. Rand Paul was back home in Bowling Green, Kentucky on Friday, decided to cut his grass. And picking up the story from there is Shepard Smith over at Fox News.
Rand Paul Friday cutting his grass, headphones on, can't hear anything. Police say a neighbor ambushed Senator Paul, assaulted him outside his home in Bowling Green, Kentucky. The first report came from state police, and that was this. Senator Paul has a minor injury. That was Saturday. Now the senator's office reports he has 5 rib fractures, some displaced ribs, and bruised lungs. Police arrested Renee Boucher. The charge, 4th-degree misdemeanor assault. They say they don't know what this was all about, which means they haven't asked. Also, 4th-degree misdemeanor assault. He's out on $7,500 bail after attacking a sitting United States senator and sending him to the hospital for a prolonged absence in great pain.
Then more recently, the attorney for the neighbor released a statement saying Senator Paul and Dr. Boucher, and that's been pronounced a variety of ways, Boucher, have been next door neighbors for 17 years. They are also prominent members of the local medical community and worked together when they were both practicing physicians. The unfortunate occurrence of November 3rd has absolutely nothing to do with either's politics or political agendas. It was a very regrettable dispute between two neighbors over a matter that most people would regard as trivial. We sincerely hope that Senator Paul is doing well and that these two gentlemen can get back to being neighbors as quickly as possible. Jim, who knows exactly what happened here? There's been a lot of digging up of this other doctor's political beliefs. It turns out he's pretty far left. There have been some heated discussions between him and Senator Paul. He, of course, insists that's not the case of what triggered this. And as David French wrote today, of course, he's going to say that either way, since the penalty could be much harsher if it is politically related. I mean, I've seen neighbors have disputes when I was growing up about where the property line was, and neither one of them would cut the grass for a while and they wouldn't speak to each other. I never saw either of them tackle one or the other or assault the other one. What do you make of what we're hearing on this story and the fact that the media hardly cares?
Well, one of the initial reports, Greg, was the idea that this had started out as some sort of complaint about ordinary gardening and lawn care issues between the two properties. Apparently that they'd been fighting. Someone said neighbors said they'd been fighting for years about leaves blowing onto the other's lawn. I don't know about you, Greg. I went out there and I just started raking. It's the precaution. I'm on good terms with both neighbors on both sides, but you know what? Just in case, I don't want to get somebody, at some point I've got headphones on, doing a ride-on lawnmower step off, and you get tackled and have 5 ribs broken. Yeah, a couple of weird aspects to this. I mean, apparently this sounds like this was not, overtly or primarily driven by their politics, but it's very tough to shake the feeling that if he'd been a big Rand Paul supporter, he might have been a little more easygoing about the issues with the garden hedge or the lawn or whatever it was. Any way you want to slice this, this is a premeditated violent attack. Rand Paul apparently is wearing those earphones for the lawnmower noise, so he can't hear him coming. And so it's the equivalent of a sucker punch, except he tackled him. Right, this is the cheapest of cheap shots. This statement from the lawyer, I'm sure he thinks he's helping. But I don't know about you, Greg. I read that as my client is a nut job who is violently, explosively enraged and dangerous and will attack people over really minor issues. Please show mercy, jury, so that my client and the man he violently attacked without reason and without provocation can go back to being neighbors. No, you move, okay? It's a bit really bizarre. Look, it was such a petty thing about for them to fight over it. That doesn't make your client look better. It makes him look more like a maniac. At this point, maybe you should say, no, this was well planned, well executed. It was a political assassination attempt. By the way, my understanding is that the criminal consequence of anything that is derived to be an assault on a senator for the course of their duties may carry a stiffer sentence. So that may be one of the explanations of, it was just them arguing over the height of the hedge or something like that, something ridiculous or something like that. But either way, you mentioned the media coverage. First of all, this sounds like it was it may have immediately been reported as a not so serious altercation. I suppose if you're Rand Paul, maybe you don't want a big deal made out of this, but I think it's kind of out of his hands now. This is now the second time Republican lawmakers have been violently attacked in public, and for no good reason. But Greg, to be honest, I can't think of a good reason to tackle Rand Paul and while he's mowing the lawn or something like that. A lot of jokes on Twitter, a lot of people who kind of immediately responded about how much they don't like Rand Paul and, oh, he had it coming or something like that. And I think it says, look, it's Twitter. It's not necessarily a reflection of the culture at large, but it does kind of indicate a good portion of our fellow citizens are about a quart low in empathy. Rand Paul wasn't doing anything wrong. And whatever dispute he and the neighbor had, he didn't deserve five broken ribs over it. A couple of doctors on Twitter were saying, look, this is not routine accident, that usually you don't see five ribs broken. Usually you see that in the sort of thing from a car accident. So Senator Paul is probably in a lot of pain today. Anybody who's had a broken rib will tell you, you only feel it when you're breathing, which is to say just about all the time. So hopefully he can make a quick and speedy recovery and that justice can be done in this bizarre and disturbing story.
Yeah, a couple extra thoughts here. First of all, I don't know how big of a town Bowling Green is, but I hope there's more than one pain specialist in that town, because if he needs help, I don't think he wants to go to the anesthesiologist who lives next door.
No, not that anesthesiologist. Give me another anesthesiologist. Yes.
And then on that same segment, Shep Smith tossed it to Chad Pergram, the Capitol Hill reporter up there, and he talked about not only the situation with the shooting at the baseball practice where Rand Paul was. So he's been targeted twice this year, and a whole bunch of other people were there as well. There's also the story of Tennessee Congressman David Kustoff, who after a town hall meeting was run off the road by a woman who was upset the fact that he voted for the House version of the health care bill. So the fact that the media is virtually burying these stories, if some guy in a Make America Great hat attacked Cory Booker or some other senator on the left, you think this would be a ticker story instead of one that leads every hour?
Tearful tributes to the senator. And the sudden inclination that the only appropriate way to respond would be to pass that senator's favorite piece of legislation. That's the only proper way to demonstrate sympathy. It says something about 2017, Greg, that I can completely forget about a violent attempt to run a Republican congressman off the road. Like most years, that's a really big deal. And this does not seem to be that in this. So I think the media has decided that, if it doesn't fit the narrative of these crazy, dangerous Republicans and these good, noble Democrats being attacked, they just, one day story, comes and goes.
Amazing. It's like 2016 just morphed right into 2017, which brings us perfectly to our third crazy martini. Last year, Jim, there was obviously folks not super thrilled about either of the major party nominees, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. So they were looking for a different option. Some kicked the tires on Gary Johnson, and the more they kicked, the more they ran away. And then Bill Kristol finally got his independent candidate that actually agreed to run, and that was Evan McMullen, former CIA guy, former staffer for Hill Republicans. He didn't do much. He got double digits in Utah, but other than that, not much accomplished. On Election Day last year, he has been prominently critical of Donald Trump in virtually every opportunity possible, and tisking basically all other conservatives and Republicans who don't have the same type of vehemence for President Trump. and anyone who supports President Trump. Today, though, he's getting a lot of blowback for this tweet, since it is Election Day in Virginia. Tight race between the Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam, the Democrat, and Ed Gillespie, the Republican, the former RNC chairman. So Evan McMullen tweets this a little after 8 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Ed Gillespie was one of the good guys, but now he peddles fear and white nationalism. It's better for Virginia and America that he not prevail. So because he's opposed to sanctuary cities and doesn't think the state should unilaterally take down all the Confederate statues, Jim, apparently Ed Gillespie is a white nationalist now. I said in our email this morning that Evan McMullen has jumped the shark, but perhaps you could put it even more starkly than that.
Quite a few people would say that that he jumped that shark a long time ago. I suppose the only good news about Evan McMullen becoming really indistinguishable from a typical Democrat, completely indistinguishable from any conventional Trump critic, of really losing any whatever remaining claim he had on being a conservative or a Republican or the kind of traditional conservative Republican who was not comfortable with where Donald Trump, both his persona, his record, his personality, his ethics, all that kind of stuff. He's now become completely indistinguishable. If not from the Keith Olbermans of the world, then I think you can safely say with the Matthew Dowds of the world or the typical left of center talking head. I don't know about you, Greg. I can now say Bob McDonnell is not my worst vote ever. Good news, former governor. Evan McMullen. When I voted for Evan McMullen, I thought I was voting for a traditional conservative guy who would, maybe run for Senate in Utah someday or something like that. Or maybe he would just fade into the background. Either way, he had served his purpose as a protest vote. I didn't realize I was signing on to the keep Evan McMullen employed for the rest of his life as the next John Huntsman Act of 2016. But apparently that's what I've done. But the interesting thing is that John Huntsman, who, oh, by the way, is now an ambassador in the Trump administration. somehow when we weren't looking, John Huntsman became a Trumpite. But they were turning into this, the typical the Republican who hates other Republicans. The technical term for this, I believe, is called a John Kasich. That basically the media's favorite Republican who looks at the rest of the party and says, oh, we have gone so wrong, that basically they make the argument for the Democrats. But they get what makes them different is that they're a Republican, right? They get to be the reasonable Republican compared to all of those knuckle-dragging Neanderthals. I really want to ask, what was the last thing Evan McMullen did that was even remotely conservative? We know he opposes absolutely everything Trump does. He didn't say anything nice about Justice Gorsuch. The folks who worked with Mullen in his campaign were saying, hey, yeah, Neil Gorsuch is a good pick. Trump has done certain conservative things. Now, if you don't like the Trump presidency overall, fine. I don't think that means we throw you out of the conservative club. But to be in conservative club, which is like Fight Club, you don't talk about it if you're in it, that you basically have to come out and defend something conservative once in a while. And Evan McMullen never does that. I never see him, for example, if he really, I didn't see him coming out and saying, oh, Ed Gillespie is my guy back during the primary against Corey Stewart. I didn't see him. I'm not seeing him up doing anything for Kim Guadagno up in New Jersey, right? Does Evan McMullen pay any attention to any other cause, any other candidate, any other policy area other than how much he dislikes Trump? I can't help but notice that Evan McMullen is jumping in after Trump tweeted in support of Gillespie earlier today. It's almost as if Trump is the true north of the Gillespie compass, and whatever Trump calls for, Evan McMullen has decided he can't. My colleague Ramesh Pinheiro has a very good column about this for Bloomberg. All of the anti-immigration stuff that allegedly Ed Gillespie's doing is he doesn't want sanctuary cities. And people will quickly turn around and say, yeah, but Virginia doesn't have any sanctuary cities. And Ed Gillespie wants to keep it that way. And until 2 days ago, we couldn't get that from Ralph Northam. Ralph Northam voted against the bill that would have kept it that way. Now, all of a sudden, Ralph Northam, apparently he just suddenly realized there's a general election coming up. And he definitely wants to, he definitely totally opposes them. And if elected, he totally wouldn't change his mind. We can absolutely be assured on that. Oh, by the way, he wants to give driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. Or at least he said that during the Democratic primary when he needed those votes. So everyone can kind of take that. But, again, if Evan McMullen really is still a Republican, I'd like him to point to the last time he actually did something to support a Republican. I complained a bit about this on Twitter this morning, Greg, and somebody said, well, he's pro-life. And I'm like, is he? When's the last time he did something in support of the pro-life cause? He certainly wasn't out there banging the drums for Gorsuch. So what's he doing? What does Evan McMullen do other than oppose Trump? And if that's who he is, what's the difference between him and Joy Reid? Other than that, probably, I think Evan McMullen probably gets a few more facts right. that's a low bar to clear. Anyway, so yeah, so that's where Evan McMullen is. And I do happen to notice, though, that I'm not seeing Evan McMullen get nearly as much attention anymore. And my sneaking suspicion is it because when you say, well, even Evan McMullen thinks Trump is wrong, it doesn't carry any weight anymore because Evan McMullen always thinks Trump is wrong, which is kind of like saying, oh, you know, even Chuck Schumer thinks Donald Trump is wrong. You know, you're not the least bit surprised by it.
It's amazing. It's amazing to watch, the Never Trump crowd, how it's kind of split between what I would say are people who can look at things fairly and keep their conservative principles. I would obviously put you in that category. You don't love Trump, but when he does things and advances policies, cuts out regulations, guts some of the oppressive EPA rules, nominates good judges, you give him credit for it. But you got some people like McMullen and Crystal and several others who, no matter what happens, that their overarching thing is to prove that they were right last year and to continue to prove it. They can't give him credit for anything.
Greg, it's exasperating.
That it is, and it never seems to end. Jim, good to have you back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.